may have heard or indeed been reading The Reluctant Fundamentalist. It was Radio 4's book at bedtime last week. It's also this month's book club choice and a timely one as we approach the 10th anniversary of 9/11. This afternoon, James Naughtie talks to Mohsin Hamid about his bestseller, The Reluctant Fundamentalist, on Book Club in an hour. Now to the classic serial and the final episode of The American Senator, written by Anthony Trollope and dramatised by Martin Wade.
Lord Rufford had departed in haste from Mistletoe, without giving Arabella Trefoil an assurance of his love and devotion, without, indeed, even so much as a word of farewell. And at first, Arabella felt lost, betrayed, and disconsolate. But in time, she summoned her spirits and wrote a letter to his lordship.
Dearest Rufford, the way you dashed off like that was very horrid, you know.
She was determined to be brave and strong.
My aunt said that you were running away from me. I almost replied that you were running away from her.
She was determined that though her hope might be forlorn, she would cling to it. So she chided him amorously for his disappearance, reminisced about the pleasures of the preceding days, and marvelled at how other women folk would all be jealous of her, though she avoided specifying betrothal as the cause of their envy.
He won't reply. Or if he does, he'll manage just a few humorous, half-affectionate lines. I must have a second letter in readiness. A serious letter. I must do everything in my power. Move heaven and earth. And I must do it fast.
Arabella's notion was that if she were to fail to win Lord Rufford, she'd still have time to marry Mr. John Morton, to whom she was engaged, and accompany him on his ministerial posting to Patagonia. Mr. Morton himself, it ought to be said, was feeling unwell. His condition was not improved by the need to be much occupied with Mr. Gotobed, the American senator, who, in making his avowed study of English ways, had alienated many, Mr. Morton included, with his critical disposition and outspokenness.
Well, Mr. Morton, won't you ask me what I made of the rector's little event?
I assumed you'd be volunteering the information.
I liked his claret, though not so much as he thought I should. And he was quite wrong, of course. There's no wine here as good as the old Maduras we get at home. Oh, and I thoroughly enjoyed the discussion at the end.
I'm not sure the rector enjoyed it.
Well, I said nothing that wasn't true.
They were on their way back to Bragton Park from what the rector of Dillsborough had jocularly called his bachelor party, where the conversation, once the meal was over, had been directed by the American towards the topic of church patronage.
The question, I suppose, is whether you should have addressed the matter at all.
I can't see that I should. I was merely trying to discover why the task of curing souls and teaching God's word is undertaken by those who have inherited their position or have had it bought for them.
Yes, and I'm afraid that what you said was very personal to the rector, and upsetting, too.
How was I to know?
You must forgive me, sir, but given what has occurred this evening, and all too frequently since your arrival in England, I'm afraid that I'll find it impossible to be present with you on other social occasions.
Oh, I see. That's unfortunate.
Yes, it is.
I suspect that you agree with much of what I said about your country. What irks you, though, is to hear it from an American. I'm right, am I not?
Arabella, meanwhile, had completed the composition of her second, more serious letter. She read it through.
My dear Lord Rufford, you must forgive me if I offer what might strike you as a word or two of reproach. Your sudden, silent withdrawal from Mistletoe was all the more distressing because you had said so much to me the day before. I ought also to tell you in this regard that when we returned from the hunt, was that not, by the way, a most delightful journey? My aunt interrogated me, and I felt compelled to confess to her that we were engaged.
The word troubled her.
Too blunt? Too explicit?
But to use some vague or indirect expression here would surely defeat her purpose.
Engaged. Let it stand. The truth, I am sure you will agree, is always the best. And now that I have informed the Duchess, perhaps you might send a word to me and tell me, kind-hearted, loving man that you are, that nothing is amiss. Your very own Arabella.
Lord Rufford may have been somewhat foolish in his conduct with Arabella, but he was sharp enough to guess the workings of her mind. And Arabella's two letters which were waiting for him, the second epistle in particular, confirmed his fears.
Engaged? This isn't right! This isn't fair! I was riding with the woman. We drove back together alone. She had a fainting fit, or pretended to. Nothing else happened. Nothing of significance was said, and now, all this.
Lord Rufford began to wonder whether his best bet might be to hurry off to Central Africa and embark on an extended shooting expedition. But whatever his ultimate course of action, he must first, surely, make some reply to the lady's letters.
Rufford Hall, my dear Arabella. Oh, God!
He's proposed to you?
Yes, Mama.
Oh, Arabella! Oh, heavens! Oh, Arabella!
Mama, please. It's not so incredible. There was a plan, if you recall, and I put it into practice.
But it's all arranged and agreed, is it? Does the Duke know?
The Duke knows, but it's not all arranged, not by any means.
He did propose to you.
Mama...
Clearly, I mean, unambiguously.
Oh, you wanted something out of a work of fiction, I suppose. Lord Rufford on one knee, asking if I'd do him the honour. What a goose you are. Do you really think he proposed to me like that?
Oh, I don't know why he shouldn't. It seems a good enough way to me.
Anyway's a good way if it suits the purpose. He made an offer of marriage, Mama, and he won't wriggle out of it.
I see. So it's not all agreed and arranged. You have doubts about him?
Doubts? Of course I have doubts. A fellow like Lord Rufford will change his mind half a dozen times if he can. But I don't intend to let him.
Lord Rufford had decided to seek advice about his letter of reply, and with assistance had now achieved what he considered to be an effective document.
Rufford Hall, my dear Miss Trefoil.
The substitution of Miss Trefoil for the original Arabella set the tone.
It is a great sorrow to me that I must reply in a manner which you will not consider to be satisfactory. But you have altogether mistaken me if you think that I have said anything which was intended as a proposal.
The plain truth is, I have had no thoughts of marriage. If unintentionally I have misled you, I can do nothing more than ask for your pardon.
Arabella!
Oh! You can't come in at present, Mama.
Lady Augustus had brought the letter to Arabella that morning. She knew who it was from, since the envelope bore Lord Rufford's crest and coronet. And she guessed that its contents must be disagreeable.
Arabella!
Go away! Go away!
Such a short letter. Not a word of weakness in it. Not a single word to acknowledge what there was between us. False, insolent, cruel man.
Hateful man.
It was easy to hate. She had, after all, never loved. Riding back after the hunt, when she'd leant against Lord Rufford and he'd held her and kissed her, she'd thought only of the victory she'd achieved and, of course, of possible accidents to her hair and disorganization of her clothing.
How dare he say I was mistaken? Dare he say he had no thought of marriage? I hate him, and if he won't marry me, I'll punish him for it. Oh, but if I do that, I'll cut the ground from under my feet, ruin whatever prospects I might still have elsewhere.
It was not too late, she thought, for an alliance with Mr. John Morton. She recoiled with a shudder at the notion of Patagonian exile. But she saw that there was some advantage in getting away from those who despised her, from those she disliked, her mother most especially.
I'll write to Mr. Morton today. I'll be affectionate, and I'll tell him that money matters, which have been such an obstacle, have now been settled, and that I may henceforth be regarded as his very own.
And yet... When she unlocked her door, and Lady Augustus was admitted into the room. Arabella was still undecided.
He's jilted you.
Oh.
I knew he would.
You knew nothing of the kind. Though if you did, why were you so keen to put me up to the affair in the first place?
I wasn't. That's a lie. It's all over then, is it?
I didn't say that.
But the letter...
The letter is the most scandalous collection of impudent words that a man ever sent to a woman. No, Mama. It is decidedly not all over. I was not mistaken. He proposed to me as plainly as any fellow could, and he won't escape. I must act fast, though. I want John Morton and Patagonia kept in reserve, but they won't wait forever. Of course, if Papa weren't the fool that he is, he'd manage the whole thing for me. Do you know where we'll find him?
In his club, I suppose.
I'll go there and prize him out.
Arabella, I must protest.
I'd rather you didn't, Papa. Please, continue reading.
But I've no wish to be here.
Then we must finish our business quickly, must we not?
After dragging Lord Augustus from the comfort of his club, Arabella had closed him in her carriage and presented him with a letter she drafted.
Continue reading, if you will.
My daughter now informs me that you have repudiated your proposal. This is all true, is it?
Of course it's true.
And her condition is extremely distressing, not least because she may in all respects be regarded as your lordship's equal. You know, he won't take any notice of me.
He shall, Papa. You'll make sure of that.
Arabella, you'll copy
out the letter and you'll sign it and send it. And if the letter doesn't have its desired effect, you'll talk to Lord Rufford in person.
No, yes.
You must. Just think what they'd say about you if it was known that you'd refuse to help your own daughter in such a plight. You'd be thrown out of the club.
You will recall, perhaps, that the master's household had been in great turmoil over the fact that Mary had turned down Lawrence Twentyman's proposal of marriage. Mary, indeed, had been so affected by her stepmother's displeasure that she'd written to Lady Ushant, asking if she might stay with her at Cheltenham. Lady Ushant would have been only too pleased to receive Mary once more, but a complication had arisen which Reginald, Lady Ushant's nephew, explained to Mary.
I'm afraid you won't be going to Cheltenham.
I won't?
Not next week, at least. The fact is, Lady Ushant is coming to Bragton Park.
To Bragton?
John Morton has been taken ill.
Oh, dear.
His condition is so severe that he's summoned Lady Ushant to see him. She says that she'd like to meet you there, if you're agreeable.
But of course I am.
Good. She arrives on Sunday, I believe.
Mary was not alone, it transpired, in being invited to Bragton Park. John Morton had written to Arabella.
He's dying.
Dying? Who? Lord Rufford?
Mr. Morton.
Oh, well, it won't matter very much, I suppose. Not if you succeed with Rufford.
Mama, how can you say such a thing?
Oh, I beg your pardon, my dear. I wasn't aware that you had fond feelings for Mr. Morton.
I didn't. It's true. Oh, Mama. I think how badly I've treated him.
No, I wouldn't if I were you. Won't do him any good.
He wants me to go to Bragton.
Oh, surely not.
Yes, Mama, and you're to come with me.
Out of the question.
You must. I can't go on my own.
I told you, Arabella, I'm never going there again. Not unless he makes the place fit to live in.
Mama, the man's dying.
So you say, my dear. And you must rush to his side, even though you declare yourself to be engaged to Lord Rufford. What is the family to make of such grotesque behaviour? You can't expect them to help you with Lord Rufford when you're ministering to John Morton.
I don't care. I intend to go. He's a good man. He never treated me badly, despite the way I treated him. He wasn't the same as the others. He took life seriously. He had a career, earned his bread. And he liked me. Loved me, even. Though I hardly deserved his love. All the others, they flattered me and joked with me and were indiscreet with me. But in the end, they all wanted to escape. They'd enjoyed themselves enough. John Morton, though, he stayed true to me. He'd marry me tomorrow, I'm sure, if he wasn't so ill. Oh, Mama, what a wretched creature I am.
When John Morton was first confined to his bed, his grandmother was informed and came to him. And while she was at Bragton Park, his condition got worse, and had become dangerous, so that he now began to see that his time might be very short.
I ought to tell you, I've asked Miss Trefoil to visit me.
Miss Trefoil? After all the unpleasantness of the last occasion, you want her to return?
Yes.
Is the woman's appalling mother to be with her?
I'm not sure.
Well, I have to say, John...
And there's something else. I'm preparing my will.
In the circumstances, that may be a prudent measure.
The property is to go to Reginald.
No.
I'm quite decided.
Impossible.
Grandmother.
How can you contemplate such an idea, knowing what you know? Shameful. The man has no right to inherit.
The man has every right. And I know of nothing, Grandmother, which should dissuade me. I'm all too aware, of course, there has been a gulf between the two sides of the family and much hatred promoted by yourself.
Oh.
But I see no reason why it should be visited upon my cousin, or indeed upon Lady Ushant. Oh, yes, and she'll be coming here too.
John.
It's been a while since she was living at Bragton, and it will be good to have her back. For a day or two, at the very least.
Mr. Gotobed, meanwhile, was paying a call on Mounser Green, a colleague of John Morton's at the Foreign Office.
So, Mr. Gotobed, how was the great day? Did you find that Parliament was opened satisfactorily?
Oh, the ceremony was all performed to perfection. But the business side of things left a lot to be desired. Suffrage reform, for instance.
Yes, Senator?
It's a sham, designed to delude the populace. I tell you, Green, if this country of yours doesn't get its house in order, the roof will fall in.
Yes. Well...
If you'd like to hear more...
I'm
going to deliver a lecture.
Are you?
Wednesday, the 14th of April, St. James's Hall. I'm calling the lecture The Irrationality of Englishmen. It'd be a set of conclusions drawn from what I've encountered during my stay here.
Well, talking of which...
The Gorley affair.
Yes.
The man's a rogue. But that didn't mean he was wrong.
Has the case been abandoned?
He was a rogue.
It has, I assume.
But that lawyer Bearside, who was going to represent him, he was 10 times worse. Do you know, he threatened to bring an action against me.
You paid him off, did you?
Correct. Leaves a bad taste in the mouth. Wretched business all round.
Yes, you'll be glad to get back home. I suppose you've quit Bragton Park?
Left last week. Morton and I had something of a falling out. And then there's been this unfortunate illness.
Most unfortunate. Patagonia's off, I fear. That's a long journey he won't be making.
No, Mrs. Morton was here, but she's left.
I see.
Her grandson took some measures, my dear, which were not altogether agreeable to her.
Inviting you to stay, for instance?
Yes. And then there's the will. It seems she was unable to tolerate the fact that her own people were not to be provided for. Said some very unpleasant things about Reginald, and about me, no doubt, and then left in the morning without a further word to Mr. Morton.
Oh, dear.
Hard to believe, is it not, that Reginald is to become Squire of Bragton? I'm glad of it, I suppose. But it doesn't seem quite right. An old family property, going to a man who has no family, and who shows few signs of remedying the situation. Though one shouldn't think about such things while his poor cousin is lying ill upstairs. Oh, there's to be another visitor here, Miss Trefoil. You know that she and Mr. Morton were...
I'd heard they were engaged, and then that they weren't engaged.
Yes, she's coming tomorrow. So here I am, back at Bragton, in charge of the household, not knowing what I should be saying to Miss Trefoil, and not knowing what I should do, except to see that Mr. Morton's cared for. Now tell me, my dear, how are things with young Mr. Twentyman? Have you absolutely refused him?
I wrote to him, as I'd promised I would, and I declined his offer.
Ah, poor fellow. But I won't say a word about the matter. Girls should never be in a hurry to get married. And if you don't love him...
It's quite settled.
There you are, then. Now, my dear, have you seen Reginald? He's in the library, I believe.
Mary was not much inclined to speak with Reginald Morton. she was quite unaware that he possessed any feelings for her, which was not to be wondered at, since he'd scarcely begun to acknowledge as much to himself. And though he'd been advised that she loved someone, he had no idea that such a person might be Reginald Morton. In recent weeks, it must be said, Mary's thoughts about him had become less than happy. She didn't love Lawrence Twentyman, it's true, but Mr. Morton ought not to have said that Lawrence was unfit to be her husband. He ought not to have meddled and imposed himself and disturbed her ease of mind.
Oh, well, when he's Squire of Bragton, he won't think about intruding any more. No, no, he'll be far too exalted for that, and far too busy with minding the property and finding some stately lady to be his wife. Mr. Morton?
Mary, how good to see you. Your first visit to Bragton, I believe, for quite a while.
Yes.
I do hope you'll visit often.
Thank you, but...
I mean, of course, while my aunt is staying here.
Oh, of course.
I can't say what may happen in the future.
No, indeed.
But whatever shall befall, I trust that you and I won't lose sight of each other. And if I can be of any assistance to you and your family...
Thank you, you're very kind. As to visiting here...
Yes?
I may come over again before Lady Ushant leaves, but I've no wish to be in your way.
Reginald Morton would be above her, utterly removed from her and beyond her reach. If Mary had nurtured hopes, they must be abandoned now.
Arabella, I've brought some news, good news, from your father.
That hardly seems likely.
He's demanded an interview with Lord Rufford.
Demanded? Heavens.
And Lord Rufford has consented. What's more, it's to be held at the Duke's house. The Duke has agreed.
The Duke, I take it, won't be there himself.
No, 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 no. But to have the meeting in the family mansion, it will seem to Lord Rufford that the full weight of the Duke is behind your father, and that the Duke's wealth, or some of it, will be won by Lord Rufford if he agrees to marry you.
Lord Rufford may not be the most astute of men, Mama, but I don't believe he'll be deceived quite so easily.
Perhaps not, my dear, but still, this is progress, is it not? The very fact that Rufford has agreed to talk to your father is a sign that his resistance is weakening. Success, I feel, is imminent.
Mama,
And you ought, therefore, to dismiss all thought of us going down to Bragton.
No, Mama.
Seeing Mr. Morton will serve no purpose. Worse, it might wreck our hopes. What if Lord Rufford found out?
I don't believe he'd be much offended. He could hardly consider it a crime.
But he might use it as an excuse for not marrying you. I think you've given up. I think you've told yourself that there's no chance with Rufford, and you've decided to mend your ways, be a nurse to the sick and dying.
And you, I think, are as hard-hearted as ever. No feelings of regret, or guilt, or sorrow. I'm surprised you never rose any higher in the world.
In spite of her mother's advice, Arabella journeyed to Bragton, and the mother went with her.
One night. That's all. No more. You promise me?
I promise.
And Arabella?
Yes, Mama?
If he wants to talk about the will, don't refuse him.
They arrived and were received by Lady Ushant. The next morning, neither Lady Augustus nor Arabella came down to breakfast, but at 10 o'clock, Arabella was ready, as arranged, to be taken into Mr. Morton's room.
Mr. Morton?
She sat at the bedside and put her hand on his.
I want to tell you something, but it will upset you. I want to speak about Lord Rufford, about what happened.
Speak, please.
At Rufford Hall, he and I, and at the Duke's place at Mistletoe, I've been vile and wretched and deceitful. I don't love him. I never could.
But he's proposed to you.
Yes, he's proposed.
Will you marry him?
I don't know. I'm so sorry. So very sorry. There. I've nothing more to say, except, of course, to hope that you soon recover. You should never have proposed to me, and I should never have accepted.
You deserve so much better than marriage to me.
He was silent. She let go of his hand, but with the little strength that he possessed, he grasped her fingers.
I love you, and I forgive you.
I don't understand it. I don't understand why I was brought to this frightful place at a terrible sacrifice for no purpose whatsoever. And why were you crying when you left him, as if you worshipped the man and never planned to marry someone else entirely?
Yes. Very strange and foolish. I should feel ashamed of my tears, shouldn't I? After so many years of studying you, I should have got rid of all that nonsense. I told him everything, Mama.
Everything? Then you're a fool.
The man's dying.
So they say. But if he recovers, he'll find you've ruined your chances with him.
It's hard to determine whether Lord Augustus or Lord Rufford was the more dismayed about the meeting that was to take place between them. The former's only principle in life was to avoid trouble, and rather than suffer this single inconvenience, he would have preferred to let his daughter be jilted a thousand times. As for Lord Rufford, he was not much impressed by the prospect of a journey to town and a pointless interview with someone he regarded as a fat old fool, when he might have been hunting instead.
Morning, Rufford.
Good morning.
Lord Augustus was more than half an hour late, owing in part to the need for his first soda and brandy of the day. Lord Rufford, who had been prompt, found that his ill humour was hardly mollified by the delay.
This is very disagreeable, is it not?
Very.
Damn it, what's the meaning of it all? That's what I want to know. Do you not intend to marry the girl?
I admire your daughter exceedingly, but marriage, it isn't in my line.
Not in your line? Well, if it isn't in your line, then why did you say what you said to her?
I said nothing about marriage.
Your conduct, sir, indicated your intentions. You took her hunting, though she never hunts. You gave her a horse. You were alone with her in a carriage. Damn it, you're engaged to her. You were engaged to her when she got into that carriage, and you were even more engaged when she got out. So, what do you intend to do,
I don't intend to marry her.
You don't?
No. As you say, it's very disagreeable. I suppose...
Yes?
I suppose I might as well go now.
The Trefoils had left Bragton Park, and Mrs. Morton had returned. Her grandson's condition, it had been reported to her, had not improved, and it had distressed her to think that Lady Ushant remained at Bragton and was paramount there, and that John Morton might die in her ladyship's arms. Her jealousy was aroused, and who knows, perhaps her heart was softened too.
It must be a great trouble to you, Lady Ushant, being away from your home.
Not at all. I've nothing much there to hurry me back.
Well, I shall stay at Bragton now, till the end. I regard it as my duty.
Yes, indeed, I'm sure it is.
It was kind of you to visit, and so convenient that you should be here just when a business matter called me away, but I don't think I should ask you for any further sacrifice.
It's no sacrifice, believe me.
But I see no reason why you should give up your time.
I'm an old woman, Mrs. Morton. My time is very much my own.
Lady Ushant, I have to say, it's hardly right in a situation such as this that there should be a stranger in the house.
A stranger? My dear father was the owner of Bragton Park. I've lived here for many more years than you.
I meant a stranger to my grandson.
But if I were, why should he have summoned me?
Whatever response Mrs. Morton might have managed, there was no time to offer it. The door opened and Reginald entered. He was a daily visitor to the house, and though he knew that Mrs. Morton was present, he didn't consider that there was any need for him to be announced.
Good morning.
Mrs. Morton, my nephew, Reginald.
Mrs. Morton said nothing. She looked sternly at the intruder and stalked out of the room.
I did all I could.
All you could?
Nonsense.
He claims he never said a word about marriage. So who am I to believe?
Your own daughter, I'd have hoped.
Why should I? Why shouldn't his word be as good as yours? If it isn't, the fault's yours for putting faith in the fellow.
Oh.
You should have got his proposal in writing.
So that's that, is it? He's not even to be punished.
What do you suggest? I'm to take a stick to him, am I?
Any other father would.
Any other father would have a daughter he could trust. I'm not sure he was engaged to you at all.
Oh.
Anyway, I won't be interfering anymore. Oh, I've spoken with my brother.
Will he interfere?
No.
I thought not.
He says an appeal should be made to Lord Rufford's feelings. Such an appeal, he says, should come from a woman.
Well?
He suggests it should come from you.
Lord Rufford had begun to believe that his meeting with Lord Augustus constituted the end of the matter, and that nothing terrible could be done to him now. You may imagine, therefore, that when a letter arrived from the Duke of Mayfair requesting that a second interview be held with Lady Augustus, he was appalled and disgusted.
Monstrous! It's outrageous! Am I to be interrogated by each of that despicable family in turn? Enough! I won't go!
He went. After better counsel had prevailed, Lord Rufford decided that he must deny himself another hunting opportunity. The run of the season, it was expected to be, and he travelled up to London once again and paid another call at the Duke's mansion.
Lady Augustus, I hope that you're quite well.
Lord Rufford, you can hardly expect that I am, since you have plunged me and my daughter into a state of misery too deep to be fathomed.
Lady Augustus had rehearsed admirably. Her countenance and her words were prepared so that they might have the maximum effect upon Lord Rufford's sensibilities. But he was unmoved. He even attempted a riposte of his own.
I understand that your daughter has been engaged, perhaps still is, to Mr. John Morton.
That was finished long ago.
But she went to see him only recently.
The man is on his deathbed. Arabella saw him at his request because he'd behaved badly to her.
Oh, really?
She wanted to offer him her forgiveness.
Ah, yes. If only she could do the same for me. If only I could somehow atone for all this trouble.
It was at this stage in the proceedings that an idea presented itself to Lord Rufford. A low-minded idea, it must be admitted. The mother and the daughter, he'd become aware, were continually distressed by lack of funds. Might some pecuniary recompense be offered in return for an end to all interviews? The same low-minded idea, by some strange synchronicity, had occurred to Lady Augustus, too.
There might be a way for me to atone.
There might.
6,000.
8.
Agreed.
I hear that young Mr. Twentyman is selling his farm.
Yes. He gave me first refusal.
But you didn't refuse.
I didn't decide.
The farm was part of the estate years ago.
So I understand.
It would be good to acquire it again.
Perhaps.
I could put up some of the money myself. But to whom would the farm go eventually?
It would go with the rest of the property. To my cousin, who is the rightful heir.
No.
Indeed he is. There's no room for argument.
John, how can he be the rightful heir when he's not his father's son?
Enough. Enough. I don't believe a word of it, and nor does anyone apart from you. No more of that slander. Please.
Mary? Are you going back to Dillsborough?
Yes.
May I walk with you?
Of course. Lady Ushant thinks your cousin's no better.
She's right, I'm afraid. She's moving out, did she tell you? She'll stay with me at Hobbit Hall.
Yes.
When she's gone, the atmosphere at Bragton will improve, she says, and the invalid will have more peace of mind. Not too certain myself. I wish I knew how it would all turn out.
You must surely be prepared for the worst. With respect to your cousin, I mean.
Yes.
And after that, you'll inherit Bragton Park.
So it would seem. And yet I've no desire to do so. No aspiration to be Squire of Bragton. Then again, what's so fine about my present hermit existence? What do I do as it is?
My view...
Yes, Mary?
My view is that being Squire ought to be a fine sort of life. The very best of lives. And more than that, being Squire should be your duty.
When Lord Rufford reflected upon the meeting with Lady Augustus, he decided that he'd been foolishly generous, and he promised himself that he would never again kiss a young lady in a carriage. Lady Augustus, meanwhile, who believed she'd won a great victory, was soon told otherwise.
£8,000?
I don't think he'd have paid any more.
I'm to be sold, am I? My reputation, my character, my hopes... Sold for £8,000.
It's to be all yours, my dear. Beyond your father's reach or mine. Arabella, this is better, surely, than either of us could have hoped.
I won't touch a farthing of it, not a farthing.
Poor Lady Augustus. In the past, she and Arabella had moved with equal steps along their unsalubrious path. They'd pretended to be in well-known hotels when they were skulking in humble lodgings. They'd fished for marital nibbles in turbid waters, and they'd told mutual falsehoods to unbelieving creditors. But now, the daughter was overcome with honest indignation and stood upon the little that remained of her dignity.
He'd have married me sooner or later. He wouldn't be prepared to pay all that money if he didn't know what the alternative would be.
Arabella, you have to live. You're not getting any younger. There isn't a man in London who doesn't know how long you've been looking for happiness.
Hold your tongue.
We have to face facts. You and I can't continue as we were.
You're right about that. I'd sooner be in the workhouse. You've betrayed me, Mama. Ruined me.
Nonsense. I found £8,000 for you, and this is how I'm thanked for it. 12 years I've slaved for you. 12 years of constant sacrifice. Arabella, speak to me.
What's the use? You know what I think of you. We should go our separate ways. If we stay together, we'll kill each other.
I tell you, Arabella, you've killed me as it is.
I got your note, Lady Ushant. What is wrong?
I don't know. Nothing, I hope. But I confess that I'm afraid. Your father was here yesterday. It was Mrs. Morton who sent for him, and he was with her the entire time, I'm certain. Did he talk to you about his visit?
No.
Nor should he, of course. He's a respectable and trusted attorney.
You believe it was to do with the will?
Yes.
If it was, why should you be afraid? Why should Mrs. Morton not be acting on her grandson's authority?
Oh, she might well be. Who knows what she may have discussed with him? Who knows what Mr. Morton in his feeble state may have agreed to? I've said more than I ought, but I'm all too aware how fierce that woman's hatred is towards Reginald, how vehemently she opposes the idea that he should be heir of Bragton. Oh, Mary, what am I to do?
Afternoon, Mr. Green.
Mr. Gotobed.
Allow me to present you with an invitation to my lecture.
Oh, so grateful.
Well, you got me into the state opening. A front row seat for the irrationality of Englishmen was the least I could do.
I think I shall still be in the country.
Where else might you be?
Patagonia.
Patagonia?
Yes. Expatriation at last. It has to be admitted, Patagonia isn't exactly the place one would have chosen. But one doesn't like to refuse a step upwards.
Oh, and this is settled, is it?
It is.
Oh.
Even if Morton pulls through, and the news isn't too cheery, he couldn't be considered. Talking of Morton, I met the young lady the other day.
Miss Trefoil, you mean?
Interesting creature.
Mr. Green, I've heard numerous examples of English understatement during my stay here, but that's the best. Where did you encounter her?
At my aunt's. She's staying with her in Portugal Street. My aunt, I've discovered, is a very distant relation of Miss Trefoil.
Is Miss Trefoil's mother staying there too?
No, no. From what I've learned, mother and daughter have become estranged.
Since Arabella's arrival, Mounser Green had visited his aunt's house every evening, and Arabella never doubted that she herself was the cause of this regularity.
Mr. Green!
Miss Trefoil!
Mr. Green, how are you?
In fine fettle.
Old habits, she found, died hard. But with Mr. Green, she plied her lures in an unfamiliar mode, encouraging him almost to weep with her rather than flirt. On this particular evening, she also required a promise of help.
Mr. Green, I've a great favour to ask. I wonder if you'd call for me here very early tomorrow morning at 6.
6? Good Lord. That is a great favour. And where must I take you?
The station at King's Cross. And you're to ask me no questions.
Very well. But I hope, forgive me for saying so, I hope you're not intending something rash.
John Morton died at 4 o'clock on the morning of Friday, the 5th of March. By Sunday, his grandmother had locked and sealed up all the cupboards and drawers in Bragton Park and had gone to London. The funeral took place on the Thursday, and the will was read out after the ceremony. The bulk of the property was to go to Reginald Morton. He was to be Squire of Bragton.
So where were they?
Mrs. Morton had them.
What?
She took them with her when she left. Every single key in the house. It's as if she still hoped somehow to thwart the will. But the lawyer kindly retrieved them.
The woman tried her hardest, that's certain. It's fortunate, perhaps, that your cousin didn't leave his death till later.
Yes, Aunt. But for better or worse, the will was unchanged. So let's have no more unpleasant speculation.
Tell me, Reginald, do you like Bragton Park?
I don't know. I'm not sure I like what it means, or ought to mean. Do you think, Aunt, that I've left it too late to ride to hounds or learn how to shoot?
You'll need to entertain, at least.
Yes. The rector will have to come, and all the other parsons.
Lord Rufford, too.
Oh, heavens. What on earth would I say to him? I won't live here.
Of course you will.
No, not till I'm married. I'll stay at Hoppet Hall. But listen, this is your proper home, and you love the place.
Reginald...
No, no, you must return to Bragton for good. I insist.
Dearest Reginald, you will marry, will you not?
Men of property, I believe, are expected to.
Yes, but when you marry, she'll be someone you love.
Arabella was attired simply, but by no means dowdily, in a black silk dress, and she'd taken some trouble with her face and hair. Her purpose was revenge, but she still had an eye to the possibility, remote though it was, of securing marriage with his lordship. The door of Rufford Hall was opened to her by a servant who remembered her well from her previous visit.
Miss Trefoil?
Is Lord Rufford at home?
I believe he is.
Arabella moved past the servant and stood in the hall. Her unspoken message was that wherever Lord Rufford might be, she intended to find him, and she wouldn't leave until she'd succeeded. If he ran away, she'd run after him. This was bravery of a sort. It was more than Lord Rufford possessed, at least.
Where is he? Is he at luncheon already?
I think not. If you would care to wait...
No, I won't. The matter is of the utmost importance. Tell me where he is. Tell me.
He's in the park.
Lord Rufford was standing with a small group of labourers with whom he'd been organising the extension of the fence. In due course, he became aware that a woman was approaching from the direction of the house.
No. Surely not.
As Arabella advanced, she decreased her pace, as if certain of her prey.
Surely not. But it is. It is.
The nearer she drew to him, the more majestic she became. Her veil was thrown back. Her head was held high.
Oh,
God, what am I to do?
One expedient would have been to vault over the fence and escape from her. Lord Rufford might indeed have chosen this course of action were it not for the men who were there to see it. He decided that the best he could do was to leave them to their work and come forward to meet Arabella. The succession of interviews, it was clear, was not yet over, and this promised to be the most painful.
Lord Rufford, you have treated me most shamefully.
If you mean about the offer of money...
No, that vileness was not your worst, as you're fully aware. Lord Rufford, in the carriage on the way back to Mistletoe, you took me in your arms. Why? What did you mean by it? You said you loved me, and I believed you. You swore that you loved me with all your heart. Were you lying?
Of course he was.
Were you?
He knew it, and so did she.
Well, sir? Will you give me no reply? Are you unable to account for your words and actions?
It seemed to Lord Rufford that anger made Arabella very beautiful. More beautiful than ever. He almost regretted not marrying her.
I never met a man so incapable of speech. But if you were to open your mouth, you'd only tell another falsehood. You're a liar, sir. A coward, too. As was clear enough when you fled from Mistletoe. From that day to this, you haven't dared to meet with me. Haven't dared to confess the truth. Miserable, despicable creature. You may be a lord, but you can't be called a gentleman.
She turned and walked away towards the park gates. And as she walked, she wept. It was all over. All gone. Rufford had escaped her, and John Morton was dead. All her hard work, all her plans and devices, they'd come to nothing.
What is this? No.
When she returned to her lodgings, she found a letter waiting for her. It revealed that subsequent to the death of Mr. John Morton, she was to receive £5,000, as well as Mr. Morton's watch and rings.
No. Impossible.
For a moment or two, she thought that she should refuse the money, just as she'd rejected Lord Rufford's. Poor as she was, greedy as she was, she found Mr. Morton's legacy a gift of bitterness.
I treated him so badly. So cruelly. And I'm still to be rewarded.
It was the middle of March. Reginald had been in London and was expected back soon. Mary had been helping Lady Ushant with household matters, but found time to wander around the grounds at Bragton and to think about things. She preferred to think about the past, but was unable to keep her mind from the future.
I can't, won't begrudge him his inheritance. But if Bragton hadn't gone to him, might I not have won his affection in time?
She stood on the little bridge that was on the edge of the estate. It was here, months before, that she'd come upon Reginald and they'd talked. And they'd walked a little way until Lawrence Twentyman had appeared.
But as it is, Mr. Morton doesn't love me any more than I could love poor Lawrence.
And before too long, she thought, he'd find a wife. He'd find that stately lady she'd envisaged for him, and he'd make her mistress of Bragton Park.
Oh, dear.
A tear ran down her cheek and trickled onto the wooden rail of the bridge.
Well, Mary, shall we stroll around the grounds?
But Mr. Morton, you startled me.
My apologies. Would you like to take a walk? I seem to recall that the last time we were here... Mary, is anything the matter?
No.
You've been crying.
Only a very little. One's permitted such an indulgence when one's alone.
But why should you be sad? Has somebody hurt you? Been unkind to you? Is it somebody perhaps who's dear to you? A sweetheart? Who is he?
I don't believe you have the right to ask.
No.
I haven't. I'm sorry. But I must tell you, Mary, I wish it were me.
She stared at him. She wasn't sure if she understood the meaning of what she'd heard. But he stretched his hand out towards her and tightly grasped her hand. And his face came close to hers. Arabella had to look to the future. She wouldn't go back to her mother, she was sure of that. She recognized, however, that John Morton's money was not enough to keep her in great style. And after the scandal of recent months, society would surely close its doors to her. Who, she wondered now, would invite her to stay? Where was she to find new lovers? Where, indeed, was she to find a husband?
Mr. Green, I've been in conversation with your aunt. She's telling me all about Patagonia.
Ah, then your knowledge of the place exceeds mine.
When do you leave?
May.
So soon? It's strange to think, is it not, that I might have been going there.
Yes, indeed.
Poor Mr. Morton. Dear man. I wonder, by the way, if your aunt has told you my news. Mr. Morton has left me £5,000.
£5,000?
Mm.
How very nice for you.
Mm.
And how very nice for Mounser Green if it were to come his way. £5,000 was hardly a fortune, but it would pay off various debts he'd incurred and send him across the ocean a free man. He opted for marriage. And so did she. On Wednesday, April the 14th, at St. James's Hall, Piccadilly, Elias Gotobed delivered his lecture. The audience was large, for the Senator's promise to set England right had created much attention.
I'll say nothing about the monarchy. I doubt whether there are many of you who understand what its precise powers and purpose are. So a foreigner can surely be excused for his befuddlement on the matter. Regarding the House of Lords, however, I'm in no doubt. Hereditary legislature is an absurdity, a violation of rights. I tell you, the people of this country can never call themselves free while this anomaly persists. What? You can't bear to hear me, is that it? I must go back home and tell my friends that your sensitivities are too tender, that you can't endure well-meaning comments, that you refuse to stomach the truth about your nation and all its irrationalities and worse. The ridiculous custom, for instance, which permits 100 harum-scarum hunters to trample down crops and fences and charge through domestic gardens. The curiosities of church patronage and military promotion. The vagaries of the civil service. The shortcomings of your educational system. The plight of your laboring classes. Oh yes, I've learned a lot over the past few months.
I'm sorry you weren't allowed to finish.
So am I.
Was there much more?
Oh, much more.
I must say, I admire your tenacity and courage, Mr. Gotobed. But I suppose one has to be a little cautious when informing an audience of its faults.
Well, you people tell us about ours pretty often. Your country has some things to recommend it. For instance, there's one. Look, the splendid pillar box for the posting of letters. Anyway, I'll be setting off home in a couple of days. And you'll be leaving soon, I suppose.
Yes, but I must marry first.
Oh? Anyone in particular?
Miss Arabella Trefoil.
Miss Trefoil? Well, extraordinary. Now, there's a topic for me. The English way of marriage.
The wedding was a very quiet affair. And when it was over, Lady Augustus wept bitter tears. Since now that Arabella was married, there was nothing left for her to do. And then, a few days later, Reginald Morton and Mary Masters, who had known each other somewhat longer than the other couple. They became man and wife and took up residence at Bragton Park.
Well,
you are a husband, my dearest, and the squire too.
Yes. Strange prospect. Thank heavens I have the squire's wife to help me.
If you'll allow me now to peer into the future, I imagine that Lord Rufford will find it advisable, after the dreadful business with Arabella, to make a decent marriage. And when he does so, he won't hunt or shoot nearly as often as before, and he'll go to church regularly, and he'll get fat, and he'll even surmise sometimes that he might have done better by marrying Arabella. As for that good lady and her husband...
I wonder what you'll think of Patagonia.
Not a lot. One place tends to be much like another, I find.
You'll have duties to perform. Life won't be endless fun, Mrs. Green.
It never has been, I assure you of that. And such pleasures as were mine have generally come at a price. I've worked hard over the years. Oh, yes. I've worked harder, Mr. Green, than you can possibly imagine.
In the final episode of The American Senator by Anthony Trollope, dramatised by Martin Wade, Trollope was played by Robert Glenister, Arabella by Anna Maxwell Martin, Lady Augustus by Barbara Flynn, and Lord Augustus, Gerard McDermott. Reginald Morton was played by Daniel Rabin, Mary by Penelope Rawlins, Lady Ushant, Joanna David, John Morton, Blake Ritson, and Mrs. Morton, Richenda Carey. Lord Rufford was played by Henry DeVas, Senator Gotobed by Stuart Milligan, and Mounser Green by Jonathan Forbes. The director was Tracy Neal.
After the news, James Naughtie brings you September's Book Club.
The last night of the 2011 BBC Proms. Lang Lang, Susan Bullock, Edward Gardner and the BBC Symphony Chorus and Orchestra. The Young Person's Guide to the Orchestra, works by Bartok, Wagner and Richard Rodgers, and a second half full of pomp, circumstance and joy unbounded. The Last Night of the Proms 2011, BBC Television and BBC Radio 3. This Saturday night from 7:30.